Hey everybody, and welcome to a double edition of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. I'm Kenny McIntosh. These are episodes 215 and 216, June 23rd and June 30th, 1997. The Goldberg tour and Saunders' trip internationally meant that we couldn't do them all together at the same. We couldn't do them at the times we were supposed to, so we're here for a double bill. Sondra, hello.
Hello, Kenny. How are you today after, you know, tour madness is winding down? We're sitting here having a couple beers, podcasting about Retro Raw. Cheers.
I'm good. It's I get a break after this. I have a splitting headache. But,
right.
But after this podcast, I can relax and sleep. So
that's good.
I'm good.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're gonna kick off here with the June 23rd. 1997 edition of Raw is War. So for these, because obviously we're talking about two shows rather than one, we're not going to go into as many sort of backstage segments as we usually do. We're just going to kind of go through the big stuff that happens. So on the June 23rd show, we have the Nation of Domination coming out. Ahmed Johnson is going to explain himself. Can you explain to me Ahmed Johnson's gear that he now wears as part of the Nation of Domination.
Yeah, the new Nation of Domination. New Nation of Domination. Ahmed Johnson's gear is an enigma, isn't it? He's wearing that, like, leather, like, sort of like a do-rag, but it isn't because it's made of leather, and it has the Nation of Domination colors and everything. But I think what really ties the whole outfit together is the bum bag that he's wearing. I think that's the most important part of the outfit. It just... Ahmed Johnson is... He's just an enigma all around, frankly. I mean, I'm still not entirely sure what he said in the promo at the beginning, because who can tell when it's Ahmed Johnson? But something about the Nation of Domination had his back or something, like for the title, because nobody else had his back.
The crew had his back when he was going for the belt. Nobody had his back.
Nobody had his back, but you know who did? The crew. The crew involving Farouk and D'Lo Brown, who were attacking him constantly. Constantly they were attacking him as he was trying to go for any sort of belt or matches or anything.
Were they just keeping him in his A-game?
I don't know. Like, because Ahmed Johnson's, I guess, idea of having someone's back must be different to mine. Because I think that if you're attacking someone constantly and trying to, you know, maybe do a murder to them, that maybe... Maybe that's not having someone's back, but maybe you're right, Kenny. Maybe they're just trying to keep him on his toes so that when he faces someone like The Undertaker or faces someone like, I don't know who else, he hasn't faced anyone else. I'm trying to think of Ahmed Johnson matches we've seen. It's all been against Farouk and The Nation.
There was the match with Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Right. Well, I try to forget the Hunter Hearst Helmsley matches altogether. I mean, they bore me to tears whenever they're happening, so...
Well, I mean, so Ahmed cuts a decent promo.
Yeah.
And he threatens Vince McMahon, which is always good.
We always enjoy that.
And he's wearing very interesting clothing.
Uh-huh.
He's wearing very, very tight leggings.
Yes, the leggings.
With white socks.
Uh-huh.
But then we hear the rev of the motorcycles. The Disciples of Apocalypse have debuted. DOA, Crush... Leading Chains, 8-Ball, and Skull.
Those are their names?
Chains,
8-Ball,
and Skull.
And Skull are the names of the Disciples of Apocalypse. That's amazing. Didn't know that.
What, did you want them to be called Harry, Steve, and Dave?
No, I just... I didn't know what to expect, I suppose. But Chains, 8-Ball, and Skull. I mean, those sound like Power Rangers bullies. Doesn't it? Like, I mean, Skull is legitimately, you know, one of the... The mean bullies in Power Rangers, and I'm just imagining Chains and... Not Bulk. Bulk was in the Power Rangers. 8-Ball.
It's funny, though, because you should love this, but then the fact when Crush is involved, you seem to just not be able to enjoy
it. I don't like Crush. But the thing is, when Crush came out, actually, I didn't recognize Crush. Because Crush is just so boring to me, apparently, that, like, he took out his braids... And so I always just recognized Crush by the braids and the tattoo. And he had a bandana over the tattoo and he'd taken his braids out. And I thought it was a completely different human. Couldn't tell.
But everything's heated up. We've got the
but
DOA.
But there are motorcycles and that's pretty fun.
Yep. We've got gang warfare, DOA, The Nation. It's all going on.
Right. I mean, I'm not super sure why. It's just.
Just go with it.
There are motorcycles and a new Nation of Domination and all sorts of stuff is happening, so...
And then we get into Ken Shamrock versus Rockabilly, but on commentary we had Dan Beast Severn, who joins us with his mustache.
It is definitely a mustache. That's real true. Also, Dan the Beast Severn on commentary. Did he say anything?
We couldn't hear him.
We could barely hear him. He was so quiet. And they kept saying that they were having audio problems. But it seemed like every time he did talk, he was just like, yeah, Ken Shamrock's pretty good. Like, he didn't add anything to commentary whatsoever.
Nope, not one bit. Not one bit. But in the end, you know, so Ken Shamrock obviously gets a very quick victory. Shamrock comes over and shakes Severn's hand and they have a raising of the arms. Now, I don't want to defend Vince McMahon too often on this podcast, but I understand why he did not see a lot in Dan the Beast Severn from his appearance here in commentary.
If you're going by this interaction on commentary, I don't think that I saw really anything from Dan the Beast Severn either, because he didn't do anything and he was... I don't know, like, Ken Shamrock on commentary isn't necessarily great. Like, he just kind of comes across as fairly bland when he's on commentary. Love Ken Shamrock. Like, when he's throwing dudes around, that's my jam. I really like Ken Shamrock and just coming and, mm-hmm. you know, avenging against the bullies or whatever. But on commentary, he's just kind of there. But Ken Shamrock was like Macho Man Randy Savage next to Dan the Beast Severn. He just like...
That's very true. So we'll see that heat up. We then get the Tag Team Championship Tournament quarterfinals with LOD against the returning Godwins with a new attitude, Sondra.
They are angry Godwins now, and you know that they're angry and down to business because they've taken off their tops.
Let's let that sink in for a moment.
I mean, you can see the tattoos on the Godwins.
You can.
The redneck tattoo on the one. It's quite a sight to see.
The thing is, so we get the match, and Hawk ends up doing a flying clothesline to get the victory, and LOD advance. But the Godwins then, like, come in and basically start beating up Hawk, and then Animal scares him away with a chair. Then the Hart Foundation comes in to beat up Animal while Bret Hart watches on, because the Hart Foundation are evil.
Yeah.
And want to take out everyone who's going to be facing them at the Canadian Stampede.
But the Godwins aren't facing them at the... Or you're talking Legion of Doom, right. I was thinking the Godwins for a second. I was like, wait, what? I'm so confused. But yeah, the Hart Foundation are definitely the best part of Retro Raw for me right now. I kind of just like that they're beating everyone up. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, leading into Canadian Stampede, it makes sense that they would have issues with LOD. I mean, they've been having issues with LOD anyway in their tag team title matches. So yeah, it's good. It's fine. I like the chaos of it.
Chaos is good. And chaos is obviously part of what's going on with Undertaker and Paul Bearer right now. Because
clearly,
Paul Bearer has a secret. Mm-hmm. They're backstage and Undertaker just like snaps and starts going for Paul Bearer and Vader. And then Paul Bearer reminds him of the fire! And Undertaker lets him go. And
it's my favorite image of the show, actually, is just Undertaker. And Undertaker's chokeslam, it's like, it's so quick. He's just like, ah, like he's almost like a robot or something. And he grabs Paul Bearer, and then Vader comes in and he just like also snaps and grabs Vader. So you have this just bizarre cast of characters, the Undertaker choking both Paul Bearer and Vader. And it's just like, what is this weird world? What is happening? But yeah, Paul Bearer just constantly reminding him, oh, remember the fire, da da da. Like, what could that mean? I don't know. He has a secret.
Which we're going to find out.
In the next episode.
In the next episode, which we're going to talk about. So, like, Raw's had this weird thing where, like, they have these weird matches that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is Flash Funk taking on Sabu from ECW.
Right.
So, we've got Flash Funk taking on Sabu. Sabu's doing his high-flying stuff. Flash Funk is obviously a good athlete. But this is just weird. And then, it ends up going to a double count-out.
Just because why not?
What do you think of this? What do you think of this? An ECW alumni coming in.
Well, I mean, it seems like, again, when we saw, I think, Flash Funk versus RVD, I thought, in another world, in another life, this was probably a really good match and really interesting. Here in the WWF, where I don't know why any of this is happening, it's just not that compelling, I guess. Like, it was good. You get to see Sabu jumping off shit, and that's fun, but... It's just one of those matches that's just kind of there. And Flash Funk is so dead in the water right now. I mean, it's not like he's doing anything. I mean, his boots are still glorious, but...
Well, I remember you were saying, like, why is ECW around? And every week they do stuff, I kind of go, yeah, why are they around?
That's my constant question. And it doesn't seem like there's an answer. It just seems like because we have hours to fill and...
I think, according to Dave Meltzer, one of the plans was to do something with ECW at SummerSlam, which doesn't happen.
Okay. So they actually did plan, but I mean, even having ECW at SummerSlam, like, what's the point of that? Are you supposed to be cheering for ECW? Are you supposed to not? Is it supposed to just be like an exhibition situation where, you know, the companies are just working together and you're supposed to just want to see these matches you didn't think were possible? None of it really seems to have a point, I guess.
Which is a problem.
Which is a problem. So, I mean, some of the matches could be decent, but I mean, this match, you know, it didn't even go 5 minutes, ended in double count out. It's just like, all right, that's cool. Fine. Awesome.
What a showcase of ECW. Now, Mankind's journey has been pretty interesting the last few weeks.
I just want to hug him.
And the British Bulldog comes out to face Mankind, and Mankind has an Austin 316 shirt on with a sign on his neck saying, "Pick me, Steve."
Because he wants to be Steve Austin's partner in the final of the tournament. And he's so adorable about it. He's so excited and so excited to, like, oh, maybe Steve Austin will be my partner. Like, I want him to be his partner. I want him to choose Mankind as his partner. I mean, I know that Steve Austin cannot be bothered to care about Mankind whatsoever, but I don't know. I like Mankind's story arc just all of a sudden after those vignettes and after he started being this adorable little man. I just want to give him a hug.
He is very cute. And I mean, this is a relatively short match, and towards the end, Mankind ends up getting out of the running power slam and putting the mandible claw in. But then after that, there's a disqualification because Bulldog ends up whacking Mankind with a chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then he keeps swinging. He hits Mankind with the chair in the head.
Really hard.
And you've not really seen hard. This on Retro Raw. So it's difficult because this is the... I mean, these are tame chair shots to what we're going to get at some point.
Well, I mean, I have seen the I Quit match, so...
Ugh.
It's rough to watch, though. It is rough to watch chair shots to the head. And, I mean, especially... There are some things you watch when, you know, like, oh, that fall looks really nasty or whatever. It just, like... If moves look like they're going wrong, but you're like, okay, no, it's fine because they turned out okay. But Mick Foley didn't turn out like Mick Foley's brain is fucked. And so watching chair shots to the head and going, yep, that's why he feels like he's underwater all the time now. Mm-hmm. Like it kind of sucks to see it and then realize like, yeah, and it's had its lasting effects.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But you know, the whole story here I liked of Mankind, he wants Steve Austin to be his partner. He's facing Davey Boy, who, by all accounts, will probably be the guy that they have to face with Owen. Right. What made me laugh so much was they cut backstage to Owen Hart with Gorilla Monsoon, and he's got to defend the IC title against Goldust and Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and he's arguing with Gorilla Monsoon that he wants Brian Pillman at ringside,
mm-hmm.
and Gorilla Monsoon's like, sure, okay, but he keeps arguing.
Yeah.
Even though Monsoon said yes.
Because he's just very insistent, because he feels like he's been slighted by having to be in this triple threat match. I mean, I'm inclined to agree. I don't really know.
And Pat Patterson's there for no reason.
No reason whatsoever. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't really break up a fight. He's just there. I think just because, you know, they have Pat Patterson be the special guest referee, right? Yeah?
Yeah, and without wearing a referee shirt. He just
right.
wears
no,
like
he
a
just
random...
shows up to his... Just in his random business random, casual Pat Patterson.
Random polo top.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do.
Of course. But yeah, I love Owen being so combative backstage and just being like, no, I'm being screwed here. I'm being screwed here. And even when they're like, no, you're getting what you want. Doesn't matter. He needs to complain because he's Owen Hart and he's a little sleazebag and he's the best. I love him.
I actually liked the triple threat match with Owen, Goldust, and Helmsley. I know that you hate Goldust and Hunter Hearst Helmsley wrestling.
I don't want to see them together ever.
But I thought it was a fun match. And
it helped that Owen was there for sure.
But the thing is, very quickly into the match, like, Triple H ends up away, and I think Goldust gets the curtain call on... No, Goldust gets the curtain call on Hunter, mm-hmm. not Owen. And, it is Owen, sorry. I'm getting it wrong. So Goldust gets...
Because Goldust gets his foot on the rope, right?
Yeah. Hunter Hearst Helmsley gets kind of put at the ring. So we're down to Goldust and Owen. Goldust does the curtain call. I guess the 1-2-3. Pat Patterson awards him as the New York Continental Champion, but Owen had his foot on the bottom rope. And then what was funny is that, like, Gorilla Monsoon comes out, and Errol Hebner, and they basically show him the replay on the screen.
Yeah, it's on the big Tron. It's not even like they review it on a monitor. They, like, do an instant replay on the big Tron so that everyone can see what happened.
And it's like, imagine if you did that now, you'd always be showing people things in a Tron.
Constantly.
All the time.
Well, and I mean, they should be doing that. Like, if you're going to do an instant replay situation, this is wrestling, right? Like, apparently the instant replay came into question here, and yet Steve Austin is still the winner of the Royal Rumble.
That is the best point you've made on this podcast.
I'm just saying, like, It doesn't make a lot of sense, but I mean, what I love is though,
Pat Patterson the whole time is like, no, no, he did not have his foot in the rope. He did not have his foot in the rope. And then they show him and he goes, how am I supposed to know? How am I supposed to have his foot in the rope?
I think what we can gather here is that Pat Patterson, shite referee.
Mm-hmm. First ever Intercontinental Champion, Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, I know. They showed that whole video package and everything.
Completely about non-fictional situation.
Yeah, of course. It happened, Kenny.
But the match does restart. And in the end, China on the outside like hits a hurricanrana on Goldust.
Which was so good.
Which was great.
I popped so hard for that.
And then Owen ends up in the ring with Hunter. And then Brian Pillman gets involved, allowing Owen to pin Hunter Hearst Helmsley and retain his Intercontinental Championship. I thought this match was quick and fun, and I liked the swerve of Goldust becoming IC champ. It worked for me.
I liked the shenanigans of it. I mean, I'm not going to go into anything involving Hunter Hearst Helmsley wrestling Goldust and feel great about it. First, like, just going into
that's
it,
because
I'm gonna just
that's
be
fair.
Like, they're wrestling again. Like, you're trying to dress it up with a nice window dressing of Owen Hart, but you're still giving me Goldust versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and I do not appreciate it. But thankfully, Owen Hart is a beautiful, beautiful, you know, part of the World Wrestling Federation, and he does make the match a lot more fun. And I mean, the Hart Foundation, all of the chaos and shenanigans, I love it. I mean, Pat Patterson shouldn't really have restarted the match, but I guess it's up to his discretion. He just looks like he can't be bothered to actually referee the match properly, so he's like, whatever.
Do what you want.
Just, we'll restart. Who cares?
And then Brett's back. Brett and Jim Neville Meinhardt come out. They're talking to Vince. They talk about Canadian Stampede and all the opponents. Brett says the LOD think they're the best team ever, but the real best team is in the ring right now, which is Owen and Bulldog, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
No. So it's him and Anvil.
Oh,
the
yeah,
Hart
Brett
Foundation, which popped me big because obviously they were a great tag team. He thinks that he said that like Ken Shamrock had come to the WWF from the Ultimate Fairy Championship.
Yep,
great line.
Bret Hart's homophobia runs rampant on Rush Row Raw.
Yep, Goldust and Marlena want to get involved. He's got sisters at home that could beat them up. And then Stone Cold Steve Austin called him scum of the earth. And then there's Thomas Hitman Hearns, who's a boxer, who's in the front row, gets shown earlier on in the show, and he ends up jumping in the ring, because Brett calls him the Chicken Man, and he jumps the rail, and then basically Thomas Hitman Hearns like tackles the anvil. Anvil falls down, and you've got Brett and Thomas Hearns trying to get to each other. The two hitmen trying to get to each other. With referees keeping them apart. I get why they did the angle. This guy's a big deal in boxing.
He was from Detroit.
And do you know what? If he's going to hit somebody, I would rather he hit the anvil than Brett.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. When these sorts of celebrity appearances happen on, you know, current product, I barely know who people are.
Gronk?
Yeah, I know who he is because of Mojo Rawley. Like, that's the only reason I know who he is. He has a Monster energy drink. Have I told you this? That there's actually like a Gronk flavor of Monster in the US? That's a real thing. We sell it in my store. But like, I mean, I'm not going to know who this boxer is from 20 years ago. I know, I'm from Michigan, but I don't follow boxing, so I didn't really know who he was. So the segment was just kind of there for me, I guess.
What is someone from Michigan called?
A Michigander.
A Michigander. Uh-huh. You're not a very good Michigander.
No, apparently I'm not.
But this segment was fine. They did it to get on ESPN.
I did think it was interesting, all the Hart Foundation stuff. I meant to bring that up because they were in Detroit. There's actually someone with a like big Canadian flag in the front row of the crowd. And so, because what I said to you when we were watching the show, I was like, I wonder how the reaction to the Hart Foundation is going to be because they're in Detroit. They're right across the
border.
They're right across the border from Windsor. So, I mean, like, that's the way I took to get over here. You know, like, I drove through Detroit to get to Windsor and, you know, flew to Scotland. And so I was like, I wondered if the reaction would be a little bit more mixed because there are going to be a lot of Canadian fans at that show because mm-hmm. it's, you know, like it's really close. And it seemed like it was a little bit more mixed than it's been. Like when they're in Iowa, for instance, on the next episode, it seemed like the reaction to the Hart Foundation was a lot more hostile than it was in the Detroit crowd. I don't know if I'm just making it up because I knew that there were Canadians there, but it seemed more mixed.
It didn't seem as vociferous as it usually is.
Yeah.
So yeah, it seemed more half and half mm-hmm. than anything else.
The reactions were still loud for them, but it seemed like they were definitely getting more cheered than
which is I mean,
than
it's
normal.
It's mad if you're watching Raw in June of 1997 and somebody said to you, by the way, see you in November, they're all gone.
Right. Like,
what? No way. Backstage, Sondra, Savio Vega's here.
Oh, how exciting. I'm always excited to see Savio Vega.
He confronts the New Nation of... That was sarcasm, folks. he confronts the New Nation of Domination, and they beat him up. They beat up poor Savio.
They do beat up Savio Vega. I wonder what he'll do about that situation.
I popped for him getting beat up.
You did. Yeah. That's true.
So, up next, we get a match as part of the WWF Light Heavyweight Division. Sondra, they want to really get this light heavyweight division over. Bobby Fulton. Bobby Fulton? No. What's that?
Tommy Rogers?
Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton, who were the Fantastics.
Right.
They had the match on Raw. We've had Scott Putski. We've had loads of people. But tonight we get Scott Taylor versus Brian Christopher, which I had to inform you was actually Too Cool. The team of Too Cool.
Right. No, I said, didn't I say? I was like, wait, they're facing each other. How proud are you that I know what that means?
Okay, I'll give you that one.
I did. I remember. But because I always forget that Scott Taylor had hair at one point, because I always picture him bald because of when he fought the Ascension.
that's a fair point. His hair, what happened to it? Jerry Lawler joins Vince and JR in commentary, which you were thrilled about, obviously.
So on the next episode, there's some Brian Christopher stuff as well. I just don't understand why this is a storyline. I don't understand it at all. I mean, the light heavyweight division is crap, right? Like, it is terrible. I don't know.
Brian Christopher gets a nice 3-minute victory here over Scott Taylor. Lot of action.
No, there wasn't. there was a reasonable amount of action. It was a match that happened. But, I mean, if you're trying to start a new division and be like, yeah, the light heavyweights, first of all, they don't look that different to everybody else because it's not like they're that much smaller or quicker or more interesting. They're certainly not more interesting than most of the other wrestlers. So I don't understand the light heavyweight division and what they're trying to accomplish because it is shite.
It is bad. It is bad. I'll give you that.
It's terrible. And then it has, like, just to make it even more fun for me, it has this extra helping of Jerry Lawler and Brian Christopher and their family drama because Jerry Lawler won't admit that Brian Christopher's his son, and who can give a fuck?
I do think that the Canadian Stampede show may change your mind on these here cruiserweight, light heavyweight people.
Okay.
Just an opinion. We'll see.
I mean, we'll see after we're done with the show.
You're not confident, though, are you?
I don't know.
You're not confident.
I'm not confident.
Main event time, Sondra. Vader and The Undertaker, putting their differences aside, because they are both sharing the common bond of having Paul Bearer in their corner against the New Nation of Farouk and D'Lo. This is a WWF Tag Team Championship quarterfinal match. And DOA end up heading around. There's DQs going on, almost. There's loads of stuff. There's loads of chaos in the match. But in the end, 5 minutes in, Vader and Undertaker can't quite get along, so Undertaker ends up punching Vader into a running clothesline from Farouk. For the 1-2-3, Farouk and D'Lo Brown advance. The Nation get a victory. They're still in the tournament. Undertaker and Vader are eliminated. And then, as soon as the match is done, Undertaker tombstones Vader.
Yep. Which was not what Paul Bearer told him to do.
And then he chases Paul Bearer. And then as Undertaker is about to leave, Paul Bearer announces at the top of the stage that next week he will reveal to the world his big secret. He's going to tell people. Undertaker doesn't really seem to know what to do, but next week we're going to find out what the secret is. What did you think of this main event and all the shenanigans involved?
I mean, I like the shenanigans. I popped for the Undertaker tombstoning Vader and finally kind of doing his own thing, right? Like, he's... Hell of a tombstone. And he's coming, you know, he's decided that this secret that Paul Bearer has over him is just not gonna... It's not gonna control him anymore, Kenny. He's like, you know what? This secret is something that's, you know, there, and he figures Paul Bearer's probably gonna tell the secret anyway at some point, so we might as well tombstone Vader and have kind of a satisfying moment. I did kind of wonder at the end. I was like, why doesn't Paul Bearer just start screaming out what the secret is if he really wants to, like, get at the Undertaker? But I know that there needs to be intrigue for next week.
Well, you got to be dramatic about it.
Of course you do. Of course
that's
you do.
That's like whenever I have a new tour, I go, Sondra, guess who we've got?
And then he makes me guess, legitimately. Won't tell me.
And I do the pause.
Yeah, well, because you're notorious. Hey, Sondra, I have news. Well, are you going to tell me the news or no?
You enjoy the build-up.
Of course I do.
So, I would say with this show, the 23rd of June episode, I'm going to give it... I'm going to give it a thumbs in the middle. It's a middle thumb for me. I did like the continuation of the Undertaker stuff with Paul Bearer. I thought Ahmed's promo at the beginning was dynamite. I really liked Mankind wanting Steve to pick him. And yeah, I think all in, I didn't hate the show, but I didn't love it. I was very in the middle.
For me, I think it's a very, like, it's middling to down, just because I think there's some good stuff on it. The stuff that you mentioned, like, I like Shenanigans. I like some of the stuff, but it also seems like there's just so much filler.
I also like the triple threat match. I like that.
Yeah, you like the triple threat match more than I did, I think, just because Hunter vs. Helmsley and Goldust. But, you know, China's Hurricane Rana might just bring it to the thumbs in the middle for me.
Okay,
so I really like that. But it's like middling to down because there's just so much filler and a lot of the stuff, I'm just like, why is this happening? Why is there a light heavyweight division when it doesn't matter? Why? Just, I don't understand the ECW stuff. Why?
Did you see the thing about Annie Lennox on, she posted a thing on Facebook about, like a guy in New York had sent her an email saying, hey Annie, heard one of your tracks, I think you've got some real good potential.
Are you serious? Like, oh yeah, Annie Lennox might make it someday.
One day.
That's really funny.
So we go to the go-home episode here, folks, of Raw's War from Des Moines, Iowa. June 30th, 1997, episode 216. It is 216, I think. Let me just double check. But yeah, so we're in Des Moines, which, have you ever been to Des Moines, Iowa?
I don't think I've been to Des Moines, Iowa. Like, if I've been to Des Moines, Iowa, it was to drive through Des Moines, Iowa, not to stay there. I mean, I've been to other places in Iowa.
That is what you would do.
Yeah.
With Des Moines, Iowa. You would drive through it.
Yes.
I
mean, like, I know a lot of people who live in Iowa, just not Des Moines specifically.
So you obviously, this is the go-home show for Canadian Stampede. But, like, you made a good point, and I think it kind of sums up how I felt about it, but I didn't really know how to say it. This episode was weird, right?
It was so strange. They kept saying, you know, we're live. And it seemed like, it almost seemed like the ad breaks were like a minute off or something. And the live, like the, you know, trying to time the segments and whatnot just got mixed up. Mm-hmm. Because it, like, when they come back from the ad break and like the headbangers are in the ring, but you didn't hear their entrance at all. And then they start with the next entrances, but it all felt really like rushed and like you missed stuff during the commercials. And then there was also a lot of sitting around during the actual live broadcast. And also just the structure of the show. Like, we were watching it and you were like, what's the main event? Because you know, we saw Paul Bearer and we saw him reveal the secret and we saw all the Undertaker Paul Bearer stuff is really the through line of
Well, that was the only thing advertised, right?
Yeah, it was. And you know, and they got
Paul his own graphic.
They did. Oh, I love his graphic. His graphic is amazing. Him just like, you know, with his fists and looking all like, oh, I'm Paul Bearer and I'm going to reveal a secret. but I mean, that was the whole through line of the episode. And then when Paul Bearer reveals the secret and you have the whole Undertaker Paul Bearer interaction and there's still stuff to go, you're just like, what more is there to go here? So I don't know, it was just a really strangely structured episode for me, and also the production of it, it seemed like there were a lot more technical issues than normal.
Well, they kicked it off with Ken Shamrock and his good music.
Finally. Yeah, you were very excited about his music.
Finally. And he's facing off against Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the King of the Ring, with China in his corner.
Yes.
And
her lipstick was quite something this time. It was very weird, like sheer shimmery pink.
Her lips had got a bit of jaundice or something. It was weird.
It wasn't her best shade.
So it only goes about 5 minutes, and obviously Shamrock kind of has the upper hand, but China gets involved, as she always does.
Mm-hmm.
Mankind ends up coming down to distract Hunter, and then Hunter turns into a belly-to-belly suplex and ankle lock, which gives Shamrock the win. So Hunter is fuming, because Mankind has helped Shamrock get the win, and they're going to have a match of Canadian Stampede. But I loved that at the end, Shamrock goes to try and shake Mankind's hand, and he just gives him a bang bang.
Yeah, that was really cute.
It was a fun open, though.
It was fine, yeah. I mean, I like Ken Shamrock a lot. I like seeing Ken Shamrock throw people around, and if he can just throw Hunter Hearst Helmsley around, and Hunter Hearst Helmsley doesn't have to carry a match and make it the most boring thing of my life, then I appreciate that. Just really don't like him.
But let's talk about the elephant in the room. Let's talk about the bad news.
Mm-hmm.
Ahmed Johnson is injured again.
Again, yeah.
Tore his ligaments in the brawl with the DOA. Not Dead on Arrival.
Which I said, DOA just makes me think Dead on Arrival. Which I wonder if that's just, you know, foreshadowing of this faction. I don't know. I don't know how long DOA lasts. They have motorcycles, and that's cool, but I always just think of them dead on arrival and not Disciples of Apocalypse. I keep forgetting. What are their names again?
Crush.
Crush. Eight Ball.
Crush. Chains is the former fake Undertaker.
Okay.
And the two bald twins are
Yeah, because we watched Taker versus Taker this week. Yeah. They made me watch SummerSlam 94.
And Eight Ball and Skull.
Eight Ball and Skull. Yep. So good old Disciples of Apocalypse.
Was that it?
That's it.
Great. Okay. Thanks for that. That's thrilling insight.
No.
But we interview Ahmed from his hospital bed.
Yes.
Where he talks about how Undertaker is going to get it when he gets back. And if he thinks he's dead now, see what happens to him then. And the
I
nation.
Feel like you understood a lot more of Ahmed Johnson's promo than I did.
I listened very intently to Ahmed. Ahmed's my Sid.
I really do love Ahmed. But I was like, interviewing Ahmed Johnson at any point is always going to be you never quite know what he's going to say. You never quite know if it's going to be coherent because it's Ahmed Johnson, and that's part of what we love about him. Interviewing Ahmed Johnson immediately after surgery, probably not going to give you the best response.
I'd love to interview Sid after surgery.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. And this was one of those weird things too. Like Ahmed, it looked like he was going to keep talking or like maybe just go on a rant of profanity.
Yeah, they mute it.
Like they mute the sound, and then he looks like he's still talking, but they're like, nope, that's enough of Ahmed Johnson.
Poor Ahmed.
I know. He's always hurt.
Yeah, he is. We get baby Michael Cole.
Yeah.
Talking to the Legion of Doom. And Hawk popped you here, right?
Oh, I love Hawk. Because I don't know what Animal said, because it's Animal and I don't care. But Hawk said something about how, what was it? It would be like a backwater or something.
He was talking about how basically he's going to turn the opponents into dog shit. And then he talks about how you'd be that and other
And form. Other small animal excrement. That was my favorite Hawk line this time. He's great with his promos. Rats biting toes, small animal excrement, yeah. Bi-diddly-doo, whatever. Like, I love him.
So then we get Sunny in front of a casket with money for the SummerSlam $1 million challenge.
She had money in her tits.
To which Sondra was like, why is Sunny get money in her tits?
I was so confused.
Why is there a casket full of money? What is going on? And I said,
still don't know.
They're giving away $1 million at SummerSlam.
Well, no, I understand
that. I don't know how much
more
information you need for this.
I'm confused by this $1 million giveaway because I got more confused as the episode went on.
We will get there.
They're giving away $1 million, apparently. I assume, like, if I were watching this and saw, there must have been commercials for it.
I guess so.
Right? Because they're not explaining
it
well here.
Because we didn't get it.
Right. Yeah, you wouldn't have gotten it on Sky, but. Because you had Skype at this point, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, but it seems like there must be more information that we're missing because I don't feel like they're really explaining the concept of the contest at all. At all. So it's very baffling to me. But yeah, Sunny.
Stay tuned for more information. Maybe you can win $1 million.
Maybe.
With inflation, that's like 10 million.
Yeah, that'd be pretty great, actually.
Semi-finals of the Tag Team Championship Tournament. The Legion of Doom against Farouk and D'Lo. They obviously got their big victories last week over the Godwins and Undertaker and Vader. Big brawl. And it's very quick because LOD go for the Doomsday Device. But then Henry Godwin smacks Hawk with the slop bucket. And Farouk jumps on top of Hawk, gets the pin. Farouk and D'Lo advance.
They do.
To the finals. And Hawk kicks out 0.1 seconds after three.
Yep. So, which is strange because in the Hunter Hearst Helmsley match earlier, he did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's not something you see very often, the whole, like, kick out right after three to, you know, make him still look strong or whatever. And it happened twice on this show. So I was just kind of like, it was just another one of those weird pacing things. It was like, who's putting this together? Like, did they talk to each other? Because it just, I don't know. I didn't really like it. But yeah, so I mean, I was kind of surprised the Legion of Doom didn't go on to the finals, actually. I was surprised that it was the New Nation, because the Legion of Doom, they seem to love and they seem to keep giving them title opportunities. But apparently it's the New Nation's time to rise.
It's their time to shine.
It is.
Vince has an interview with the Nation of Domination. Farouk is annoyed that that nobody else in the Nation of Domination is going to get the chance to replace Ahmed Johnson at Canadian Stampede. That's going to be Vader that faces Undertaker, which kind of makes sense given Vader's with Paul Bearer.
Right.
But before we can really get anywhere, Vince talks about Crush, and then that brings out Savio Vega, who debuts Los Boricuas.
They are so shit.
We have Savio Vega, Miguel Perez.
Who apparently has come around to Savio Vega's way of thinking, because he was very annoyed with Savio Vega before, remember?
How
he was
like, awful match.
Yeah.
We've signed him to a guaranteed deal. Why?
It doesn't make any sense.
Jose Estrada Jr. and Jesus Castillo. Jesus, but, you know, Jesus Castillo. Jesus is funny.
Right, of course. Which one was the little, like, the chubby one who couldn't run to the ring properly?
I think that was Jesus.
Oh, okay.
They have a big fight, and then the Disciples of Apocalypse run out, where they commit their bikes, and it's gang warfare, Sandra.
Apparently three it's gangs. Gang warfare.
Talk us through these gangs.
I mean...
Talk us through your thoughts.
Why is any of this happening? That's my overall question for all of this. It's just... And, like, Los Barricos are so shit that they can't even have a brawl properly, because there's a bit where, like, Los Barricos are fighting the New Nation, and then you know that the Disciples of Apocalypse are supposed to come out, and so they're coming out on their motorcycles, and Los Barricos and the New Nation are just like, so we've been brawling for a while, but we should probably let them in, so, we're all just gonna stand here. And it didn't really feel as chaotic as it was supposed to, because you could see people, like, waiting for their cues, and...
You looked at me when Los Barricos came out, and you were like, there's more of these people?
Yeah. Yep. There are four of them. I don't understand why any of this is happening.
Are you not enjoying it?
It's fine. I mean, I like the motorcycles.
It's a good start.
You know, that's fine.
That's all you can
but Los Barricos, I just don't see them winning my heart necessarily. Miguel Perez is really shitty.
He is.
And Savio Vega's promos as well. Like, what did he say?
Just shouts Spanish at Michael Cole.
Yeah.
And then he goes, we are going to kick your ass!
Because he said something about, like, nobody knows better than Savio Vega about something. But it wasn't like he was speaking in the third person. He was actually talking about himself as though he were not Savio Vega.
We've all been there.
Of course.
We come back to some more light heavyweight action, Sandra, just to make you feel better. Scott Putski, son of WWF Hall of Famer Ivan Putski, against Brian Christopher. Now, they show clips of Scott Putski and then his dad, Ivan Putski, and then when Brian Christopher comes out, they show clips of Jerry Lawler.
Of course they do. And Vince is going on and on commentary about Jerry Lawler has not confirmed or denied that Brian Christopher is his son. Like, that's all he will talk about.
JR asks if he's adopted.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean,
I feel like if I had a son, I feel like if I had a son, I would do exactly what Jerry Lawler did, though.
Just deny his existence.
Look, I'm not old enough to have a son.
Right.
That age?
No I just, way. I don't understand for the life of me why this is a story. Who could give a fuck? Like, so he's your son, so he's not your son. Why do I care? Oh, wait, I don't. And that's the entire story behind this match. It's just like Jerry Lawler's getting involved in Brian Christopher. And it's so weird, because if Jerry Lawler wants to deny that Brian Christopher is his son...
Don't
accompany him, right? Like, but he's still
it's
managing
almost like,
him.
It's almost like if you murder someone, and then you hang around the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be suspected.
Like, couldn't... If Jerry Lawler really has it in his head that he's like, I don't want people knowing that this is my son. Everybody knows, obviously. Why doesn't he just say it's his brother or something?
Why were you not around in 1997?
I don't know. I mean, I was technically alive, but I wasn't watching the wrestling and being bored by Jerry Lawler and Brian Christopher. I don't understand.
You weren't watching the graps.
No.
But Jerry Lawler helps Christopher get the win over Putski. And then after the match, Scott Putski tries to attack Brian Christopher, but Lawler helps him, does a spike pile driver, and they leave Putski laying. Jerry Lawler cuts a very weird promo where he talks about... Brian Christopher says, go and lick your daddy.
Yeah, what was that?
Go and lick your daddy
was what he told Scott Putski to do.
Bizarre. But then they show you footage of Steve Austin and ECW imitating Hulk Hogan as part of an advert for the Cause Stone Cold Said So video, which is weird because at this point Hogan's obviously on top in WCW. It's very weird for them to ever mention anybody.
Well, and Vince McMahon, when they cut back to commentary, he was like, I bet you never thought you'd see Stone Cold Steve Austin imitating Hulk Hogan. But I think it was at this point that I realized that Vince himself seemed very bored by this episode.
I don't blame him.
He was not all that invested in what was going on. Like, he actually rolls his eyes at one point.
So did I.
Well, no, I did as well. But I mean, maybe you're the one who made the show. This is your fault.
Undertaker wants his creatures of the night to know that once Paul Bearer reveals the secret, please let him tell his side of the story.
Now, I feel like if we know that Paul Bearer is going to be revealing the secret, right? Like, that's the whole build in this episode. If I were the Undertaker, or if you were the Undertaker...
Can we let that digest for a second?
Yeah.
If I were the Undertaker...
If I were the Undertaker. But don't you think it would be smarter of the Undertaker to tell the story first?
Mm-hmm.
Because... I mean, regardless of what Paul Bearer is going to say or what he doesn't say, whoever tells the story first kind of has the upper hand, right? Like, in terms of getting your version of the truth across and saying, like, no, this is what happened. Because that the first version of events that people hear are going to be the ones that, like, that's what they're going to see as what happened. That's what they have everything to compare to. So I just feel like the Undertaker should have told his side of the story first and been honest and said, like, look, this is what happened. This is where I was. This is what I was doing. And then, you know, I feel like he might have been a little bit more sympathetic.
It's a fair point. It's fair.
But instead, he's brooding in a room.
Why not? We get Brian Pillman versus Mankind. It is dog shit.
Yep.
Absolute dog shit. Terrible match. Hunter comes out, tries to interfere. In the end, Mankind chases Hunter and China away. Pillman gets back in the ring for a count of victory. This was dull as dog shit.
Yes, it was. And apparently, if you're Brian Pillman, you can hit Mankind and Earl Hebner. And Earl Hebner, because he hits both of them with the ring bell in this match, and not get disqualified.
Wrestling.
I mean, it's a Hebner, so that is what it is. But yeah, this wasn't good. I still like Steve Mankind's Pick Me Steve sign. I think that's adorable. Pillman was, you know, trying to be dastardly, ripping the sign off and everything. But I feel like these two characters interacting should have been a lot more interesting than it was.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't very good. Vince McMahon brings up Paul Bearer at the beginning of Hour 2. Paul Bearer talks about the fact that he worked at a funeral home. The mortician's son was the Undertaker.
Which, yeah, I love the idea of a child growing up
called the Undertaker.
Like, that is, it's the, that's his actual name. It's just The Undertaker.
Kane's the little brother, and he basically talks about the fire. Undertaker set the home on fire, and all his family died.
Mm-hmm.
Undertaker is a murderer!
He's a murderer!
And that's it. We get told Undertaker's a murderer. Thunder and lightning begins to play, so they go to an ad break.
Right, yeah, the ad breaks are timed so strangely, but this promo I felt, and obviously I know the story, because of, you know, like, we all know the story, but it seemed like this took a long time for Paul Bearer to get out. Like, I mean, it is kind of a sordid tale, right? But it seemed like it could have been maybe a minute shorter, and that might have helped, because the crowd was really waning on this too. They were kind of like, yeah, I want to find out what the secret is, but on you go, Paul.
But, you know, he did a really good performance here, actually. It was good.
He was very good. It just...
And then we go from Paul Bearer telling us that the Undertaker's a murderer.
And then the lightning and everything. So you expect that, you know, the Undertaker is about to appear or, like, tell his side of the story. Because, like, usually when there's thunder and stuff, that signals the Undertaker. And you think that after the ad break that the Undertaker is going to be the next thing you see, right?
But instead, we cut to Sable backstage with the casket promoting the SummerSlam challenge, Million Dollar Challenge.
Yeah, so now Sable is feeling up the money. Annoyed.
Yeah, why not?
Sable. I just can't with Sable.
We continue the tag team title tournament where Owen Hart and Davey Boy Smith take on the Headbangers. And in the end, Owen and Bulldog get the victory. And as they're celebrating, Jim Cornette returns to television...
Which was strange, like, we just, a random Jim Cornette appears.
He said, you thought you'd lose me forever, I'm back.
Mm-hmm.
And then he brings
tennis racket in hand.
And then he brings out the Headhunters, who run down to the ring. Fat men run.
You say run.
Well, they waddle to the ring.
Yeah.
And then they have a very sloppy brawl with Owen and Bulldog, but one manages to do a top rope headbutt, the other one manages to do a top rope moonsault.
Which, I mean, I do love a very large fat man doing a moonsault. That is one of the most beautiful things in wrestling.
And I just, I've heard Jim Cornette tell me before how awful this was for him. And I understand why.
Well, it's terrible. It doesn't make any sense
one
at all.
One of the tits came out of one of the Headhunters.
No, both tits were out.
Both tits came out.
Both tits were out. That singlet needed to be cut a little bit
but
differently.
But luckily, Owen Hart and Bulldog won. So mm-hmm. we're going to have Owen Hart and Bulldog against the Nation in the final, and the winners will meet Austin and his partner
yes.
for the tag team titles.
I mean, it was at this point where I just looked at you, threw up my hands and said, what is going on? What the fuck is happening? Why are these fat men in the ring? I don't know who they are. Don't know what they're doing. I love Jim Cornette, but just why?
I mean, I wish I had an explanation for you. I think they were just trying something. They wanted to have a different team, and then the team just kind of didn't work.
Yeah.
So don't expect the headhunters to stick around.
It looked like it was just difficult for them to move, much mm-hmm. less wrestle.
Jim Cornette, God bless him, he tried.
He, yes.
God bless him.
He really did try very hard. He had a whistle.
Except probably that's how you control fat men.
Mm-hmm.
Whistles.
Yeah.
Undertaker wants to give his side of the story, and he basically talks about how the firefighters held him back. He wasn't at the funeral, but that was because Paul Bearer got him in the middle of the night to go and see his dead family at another funeral home. And it's the spirit of the dead that gave him strength, and he feels the spirit of his family is what will strike Paul Bearer down.
Yes.
Now, you seem to be semi-impressed with The Undertaker's ability to do something here to emit emotion.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to The Undertaker here, right? Like, he was trying to evoke as much emotion as possible. He was putting in a performance tonight. He was like, I mean, you could tell all the angst and all of this, you know, stuff that's been building up inside of him since that terrible, terrible night, the worst night of his life. And, you know, he's talking about his little brother and, you know, how, yes, they were playing with matches that day, but that's not exactly what happened. He's no murderer. And, you know, the firefighters wouldn't let him go into the house to try and save his family. I don't know why the family was in the house if he and Kane were playing with matches outside. But, I mean,
one of life's eternal questions.
I'm just saying. But, so apparently, they stole embalming fluid and that's what they burned?
They smoked cigarettes behind the funeral home.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, I mean, just dastardly kids, The Undertaker and Kane. But, yeah, I mean, The Undertaker's promo, I think my favorite part of this was when the camera cut to his hand.
Very, very quick.
Like, very quickly and then very dramatically, and he has his hand, like, outstretched, and then he almost does, like, the Baron von Reschke, like, claw motion.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you know, and he's talking about it's the spirit of the dead that gives him strength, and he, like, clenches his fist, and you just feel that, you know, and he also informs us, Kenny, that without death, there can be no life. So I feel like we got very deep.
He's very profound.
He's very
profound. His hair looked learning. Great.
It did. It was magnificent. Well, it was distraught hair because it was tied back, but it wasn't tied back cleanly. It was like he had quickly thrown a hair tie in, but he's also just been, you know, beside himself
mm-hmm.
with the stress of having the secret revealed to the world. So, I mean, fair play to The Undertaker. Not something I say all that often, but.
Yeah, I thought he was decent here.
I thought it was good. I don't think he's the greatest actor in the world.
No, but I think he did a good enough job with the material.
Mm-hmm.
And then that covers to, we have this very strange match of Vader versus Rockabilly. And then, like,
isn't even Vader versus Rockabilly.
Well, Rockabilly just starts trying to hit Vader with the guitar. Vader just basically, like, flinches a little bit, and that's it.
Because the guitar breaks on Vader's back, yeah. And Vader's just like, fuck you, Rockabilly.
And then Vader starts just pummeling Rockabilly. Undertaker runs in straight away, starts, like, pounding on Vader, and Paul Bearer on the microphone outside just starts screaming, "Murderer! Murderer!"
It's great. Paul Bearer is fantastic here. But, I mean, yeah, it just kind of turns into an Undertaker versus Vader brawl. You kind of forget that Rockabilly was there, which is maybe the correct response to Rockabilly, mm-hmm. to be
and
fair.
Then Undertaker starts slapping the piss out of Paul Bearer, and yeah. Paul Bearer tells him, "Kane's alive!"
Yeah, because Undertaker's like, "That's not what happened," and Paul Bearer's like, "Yes, it is! Kane told me! The Undertaker's like, "What the fuck?" And then Paul Bearer's like, "He's alive! Kane's alive!" I didn't expect to get the reveal that Kane was alive in the same episode as you find out that The Undertaker started the fire that burned down the funeral home.
Uh-huh.
Also, can we just let these, like... I mean, obviously, like, this is a story that I know, but how great is it that we're talking about, like, WWF in the same show where we have the Hart Foundation and, you know, Canada versus the US and all this stuff? It's like, and also, so we have this side story of The Undertaker burning down his childhood funeral home and having to view the corpse of his dead mother and...
Absolutely.
And now you find out that his brother, who you thought was dead, like, maybe Kane wasn't in the house after all because Kane is alive and Paul Bearer apparently knows where he is. And, I mean, this is proper soap opera shit.
It's good shit.
It is.
I thought the whole angle on this show, it's held up better than I thought it would.
Yeah, I think the angle is the only really decent thing on this show, to be fair. And I mean, it's, it seems very hokey because it is, but it's also exactly the kind of thing that I normally love, right? Because it's like, oh man, all this crazy shit's going down and it's like a weird story from out of nowhere. And I don't know. I liked it. I thought that that was going to be the main event segment, was Paul Bearer revealing the secret.
Definitely.
So, you know, because it seemed like it kind of should have been, right?
It does, yeah.
Because that's what they were building to the whole show.
That was the angle. But then we get, we have a main event of Steve Austin versus Jim the Anvil Neidhart. The match was bad. It went about 9 minutes. Steve Austin...
I don't know if it was, like, terrible or anything, but it was bad. It was just there.
Steve Austin mucked up a Luthes press, which he never does.
Even the stunner looked kind of shit.
Stunner looked rubbish. We have Ken Shamrock getting beaten up by Brett backstage. Brett had phoned in earlier, and it turned out...
Oh, yeah, because he was on the phone on commentary earlier from Calgary, quote-unquote.
But he was really here. He's beating up Shamrock.
It was all a ruse.
And then Bret Hart runs in for the DQ. Then Brett locks the figure four on the ring post. But then Mankind comes out, you know, loyalty to Steve Austin. And there's a really cool spot where...
he's trying to get Steve to pick him, Kenny.
And this is what you do.
Yeah.
But Brett's got the figure four in the ring post, and Mankind just runs in and just mandible claws him on the ground. And the show goes off the air with Owen Hart, Pillman, and Anvil trying to get Mankind off of Brett and hitting him with chairs and stuff. So it was an effective finish.
I do like the image of the figure four on the ring post, and then Bret Hart is getting the mandible claw as well. Yeah. That was pretty cool. That was cool.
That was cool. I think overall, this is a thumbs down show for me.
This is like, definitely a thumbs down.
And it's a shame because I think the Undertaker Paul Bearer angle was so good, but I can't really give the show a thumbs up for 15 minutes of it being good and an hour and a bit of it just being dreadful. It wasn't even dreadful, it was just boring. Like, a lot of it was just boring.
It was boring and poorly structured.
Like yeah, it kept seeming a bit off, like, a bit, like a minute off or something. But it is leading us into Canadian Stampede, and you can hear us talk about that on Patreon. We're going to be talking about that later on this week. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. So, Sandra, we're gonna cut this off because we're going to go and watch Canadian Stampede
right now. Yeah, I'm really excited to watch Canadian Stampede.
Before you fly home tomorrow. Where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for all your support for Inside the Ropes. We very much appreciate it. I'll be back tomorrow with the Raw Rundown with David. The next day we'll be back with the SmackDown Summary. And then later on this week we'll be back with the Retro Raw Rundown for the night after Canadian Stampede.
Yeah.
Tons happening. Tons of content. Sandra's going to get two more classic ITRs up on the Patreon as well. I'm doing some bonus stuff with David this week. We're also going to try and do an NXT.
Did you just say some boring stuff?
Bonus.
Bonus. It sounded like you said boring for a second. I was like, I don't think it's going to be boring.
Another American making fun of my accent.
No, never.
And we're going to try and do an NXT catch-up as well soon.
Yeah, so NXT's been good lately.
Tons of content coming. Thank you for all your support. And say something nice to somebody that you wouldn't usually say it to. Unless they're a dick, in which case, flip them off.
Sound advice. Bye.